Just started the recording.
Oh, thank you. I tried this last
You'll
time and
have
it
to
didn't
pay me
work.
for it later, though.
I'll just sick emo on you. Heat whoever really wants
Sure.
it. Thanks, Beth. All right, so go ahead and get started. So, hopefully, you guys are here to learn about how we're going to do Roslyn on GitHub. So, someone let me pick this. Bad on them. So, what this talk is going to be is mostly about Git, just kind of the basics of Git, what tools to use, what the general workflow we're going to use on Roslyn is. And then talk a little bit more of like this is how it specifically applies to Roslyn and how we are using Git, because of our relationship with TFS, it is not 100% Git. We still have a little bit of tricks to do at the back end. So anyone familiar with Git? We'll understand that just a little bit, but so what this talk is not going to be is this is not a definitive guide to Git. There is no way for that to fit in a 1 hour talk, and we really only have about 30 minutes to actually talk about Git. So instead, what we're going to do is kind of talk more about what the Git mindset is, how you really need to think about Git, go over the basic commands, and then that should be enough for you guys to kind of basically learn Git on your own to a degree. It is a bit so how many people were here about 6 years ago? Little map we have with TFS. Hey, if you use async, Git dash r, sd branch, tf branch, all these fun commands. Yeah, that don't learn Git that way. Git has no, there is no simple command mapping from what you used to do to what you do now. There are a lot of similar concepts, but there is not a one-to-one thing. And if someone hands you a one-to-one piece of paper, it is wrong. Don't use it. So Git is different. I'm pretty sure no one in this room can tell me how TFS works. Maybe you can tell me it's an SQL server, it has an ASP.NET front end. But if I ask you how the data was stored, you'd probably just look at me funny because no one, you don't need to know. It's just a black box. Git is really just a system. And the implementation of the file system bleeds into all of the presentation of commands. And every command you make is really just directly modifying making some very small edit to your machine. And if you understand how this works, it'll basically make it much easier to learn Git and much easier to move forward with it. So the most important part of Git is knowing that the core of Git is really what's called a content addressable file system. So it's a big key value store under the hood, and the value can be pretty much anything you would care about. The contents of a file, what files are in a particular directory, commits, branch information, things like that. These are all values. And the key for every value is the checksum. So basically, whatever the value is, you do a SHA-1 checksum, and that is the key.
Those ever collide? Very
Very, very, very rarely. Not something
rarely.
it's not something that Git really worries about. It's rare enough that Git does not care about it. And if it does collide, just open up, put another space in there, and you're good to go. So what's really nice about this is it means the values are immutable, because if the value ever changes, and Git stores everything in this content addressable file system. Like I said, commits, files, directories, everything will go in here. And the mapping between the SHAs and the values is really the very most central idea of Git. So definitely get used to checksums. The Unix philosophy is always do one thing and do it really well. And Git does checksums really well. Said checksums are used to look up the files, look up directory contents. Checksums are basically the starting point between how Git repos sync between machines. It basically does everything. For those of you who've never seen a SHA-1 hash before, it's a 20-byte hash, 40 characters. Git only, if you see them in their full breadth and glory, you look at them and your eyes will cross and you won't know what to do. Git only requires you to type as many letters as possible to disambiguate a given change. And I think even for like some of the biggest Git repos, they only have to go to 7 letters. So it's pretty easy. You're generally going to get in a habit of using that. That will pretty much work for anything you do. So, that being said, I'm going to kind of do a little demo here of kind of some of the basics of Git.
So that's a PowerShell, right?
Mm-hmm. That is indeed PowerShell. So we're going to create a little... create a little directory here. We're going to make this a nice little Git repo. And creating a Git repo is really simple. You call it, you do git init. All it does is it creates this one directory in your file system, .git. All of the Git metadata, branch information, remotes, they all end up under this directory. And if you go into it, it's a kind of innocuous directory. That objects folder right there, that is the content addressable store. That's where all of the data ends up. And we'll look at a couple of these other files here in just a minute. But off the bat, I'm just going to create a little file. Yes, I would like to create that file. So just a little file called cat.txt. And if we, the key, this is just a simple file, says I am a cat. If we do what's git status, it'll say that, hey, there's an untracked file called cat.txt. If we want to ask Git to pay attention to that file, we'll say, hey, Git, add that. And Git status, and I'll show, hey, there's this file. It's a new file. It's in green, which means Git is tracking it. The next commit will basically, all of the stuff that's in green, when if you have edits and adds and things, Git commit, that's what Git commits operate on. They say, hey, this is what the next Git commit will do.
Is it called a staging error?
Yes, staging or caching, Git kind of interchanges those terms, mm-hmm. but it's called the staging area, is this is what I'm just about to commit. Mm-hmm. So I can use Git commit, say, we'll say that Git commit.txt, all pretty simple and standard, but now if we want to look at things, there's a couple of commands that help us. So git log will kind of show us the history of a given repo or a file if you pass it. So like I said, everything in Git is a commit. I mean, everything in Git is part of these content addressable file system SHAs. Now you see here that we have this at the very top, the very first line of the commit says 3992. That is the SHA of the commit. And if you ever, Git has this handy little command called git cat file. And what this does, oops, pretty bent, is git cat files basically says, hey, if I have a piece of, if I have a SHA, just print out the contents. Show me what is under the hood here. Show me this, the raw blob that Git has stored for this. So you can see the commit here, if I just is 3992. If I do a cat file on that SHA-1 address, this is the entire content of a Git commit.
You know, that's really confusing because cat file is a command and you have a cat file.
I did not think about that when I first did this demo. I usually start with dogs because I'm more of a dog guy. But...
Oh, then you use dog file or?
Exactly. No, if no. You want to take a look at the dog okay. file change, dog
nah.
file.
Okay. Yeah, cat was not
good. We're debugging your presentation.
How many commits did I miss?
Just one. Just one. You've missed
two. What does cat, file stand for?
Cat file is just, have you ever used, there's a command in Unix called
what's
cat.
What's the difference between author and committer?
So author and the committer, that is basically who did the change and who committed it.
Mm-hmm. So for a pull request, they'd be different?
They can be. You actually frequently see that in things like when we push things to like CoreFX. And CoreFX you'll actually pretty commonly see in a lot of cases, I am the committer, but the author of the change was .NET bot, because we want to blame .NET bot on big things like formatting and code paste, but I ended up actually pushing it and forgetting to change my credentials, but little bit things. But this command cat file can basically use to dump any file on disk. And as you can see here, there's actually another SHA right here, this tree object. So the basic parts of a commit are the tree, which is what does the file system look like at the point of this commit, the author, the committer, and whatever message that we put in there. And we can keep digging into these objects and say that, okay, let's dig into this tree object right here. You can see that we printed out the tree and it says it has one line, cat.txt, it has a SHA in the middle, And this information on the left is basically file system permissions ignored, but if we keep digging in.
So it's not like a binary file parsed into the zipper. It's literally that text.
It's a bit of text, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can see if we print out the contents of that file, it'll once again say, I am a cat. And so that is the actual text that we committed to the file.
That's why they always insist you have the end of line.
Yep. And you can see if we actually add a... Oops. We can fix that very quick.
Oh, I see now.
Yeah. It put it up there. So, and to see how this kind of keeps going... Yes, I would like to create that. Thank you. See? New line. So, once... Ah!
Oh.
I never seen all these being recorded.
Huh? It would not be, if I did not have typos and misspeaks during a presentation, it just wouldn't be Jared. Like, let's be honest. So, if I had a new file, dog.txt, to the repo, you can see once again, if I get status, it just shows that, hey, there's a new file here. What is it? Add it.
Well, what if you don't want to commit? You think, if you don't want to commit, if you think this is a wrong change, but you already staged it.
You can unstage changes. You can basically delete things from the stage if you'd like to and say that, oh, I don't actually want to do that. And you can actually, it gets really convenient in that you can make a big change and say, I want to commit these three files, then I want to commit those other three files. That's a little more advanced, and I don't really want to drop into that today, though. Mm-hmm. This is mostly just about the basics. But you can see, did another commit, and if we run git log now, we'll see that the log now shows two commits. The first commit we already looked at in this new one. 97B47. So if we dump out this commit, we're going to see that there's actually a new line in here. We have the tree, which is representation, and the parent. And if you remember the parent, that's the checksum of the first commit. So git commits are really just these immutable pieces of data that are just, it's basically a giant immutable tree, which has pointers to all of its parents. And a commit can have zero to n parents and a single tree object. So merges, for instance, will have multiple parents. The only one that has zero is the first commit of a repo. But as you can see here.
We should remodel the syntax tree then.
After git?
Yes.
Yes.
So just quick question on how things are stored. So how does it know that its parent is that commit? Is there something in the .git directory that says what the current commit is?
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get into that. So like I said, everything is shuz in here. And so if we actually dig into the tree now, we can see.
So but this is basically a text file.
Yeah, this is all just, they're all little pieces of text that just have a definitive structure. As you can see, it's basically the first little be tree, SHA, a number of parents, then author, committer, and message. So it's just structured text. It's very, very simple, but also very powerful. But now if we basically dig into this tree object, we'll see that there are two files now in the listing. There's the cat and the dog. You see, the SHA for the cat has not changed at all because the contents of that file have not changed. We are still referencing the same value. And if we want to keep digging in, we could dig into dog, which is I am a dog. And nice and simple. And what's really nice about this model is for the people who were here in the first time I did this demo, you notice that the SHAs on the screen are the exact same SHAs that were on the screen for the first demo. Because it's just the exact same text run through the exact same algorithm, it's going to give you the same results across machines and time, which is one of the reasons, one of the ways that Git can go between machines so easily. So like I said, the basic commands of Git to get familiar with is status. Status will show you basically what files have changed, what files does Git not understand, that things are kind of new that you might want to add. Add will take commands that are unstaged and tell Git, hey, this file matters, put it in the next upcoming commit. And commit is the rough equivalent of checking in files to TFS.
So if I modify the file after I made add, will it be committed in the old state or a new state?
Pretty, the new state.
Unless you re-add it.
Yeah, you have to re-add it.
Oh, okay.
So when you add, it's so snapshot.
It's snapshot.
It's not just like, oh, this file path is going to be.
Yeah, we'll get. I think it's, what is it? Committing is the simplest operation in Git because it just takes a shell and puts it in a file. Like, it already knows what the commit is going to be. It's already pre-calculated all the great information. It's just writing 20 bytes to a file somewhere, as we'll see in just a second. So like I said, commits, just like files, they're just another piece of addressable content. It's got a reference to a parent commit object, so 0 to n. And like I said, usually it's 1. The only case you have 2 is in merges. And if you send us a commit with a triple merge, we'll probably stare at you funny for a little while. Don't cause yourself unnecessary pain. It'll also reference the tree object. The tree object is basically the file system. What is the structure of this directory that I just committed?
So it includes also subdirectories.
Yes. So the file system is basically two types of objects. There are tree objects, which we saw in commits, and blobs. And a tree object will have a list of blobs and tree objects.
So then if you down the commit, it will show the full path?
No, it just shows the file name and whether or not it's a tree or a blob. And if it's a tree, then you can build up the directory structure from that.
Oh, so it's not a plan based.
So it's not even relative paths. You can reconstruct what the file system looks like relative.
Yeah. I think I agree with you there.
So just one more dumb question on add. So if I edit the cat file, add it again, it knows that it's the same file and it removes the other one.
It knows that
the old state will not be part of that commit except as visited through the parent.
Yes. So like if I was open the cat file now, I added a new line. Yes.
And now status show that file is dirty.
So if we looked at it, it would say, hey, I've modified that file. And you have to tell Git, okay, that's cool. I'm up for this now.
So taking a change is always
back. Yes.
Very cumbersome.
So this is how Git works at a low level. There are tools that make it so this mostly goes away for you.
But it's
important to, you will eventually have to drop down to the command line to do Git things. And it's better to learn and understand how it works. It'll make it much easier for those times you do have to drop down.
You could add using wildcards, right? So
you can use add-a, you could pass in a couple of other things, but most of your adding and modified files is going to come through the UI. Mm-hmm. But if we were to look at the log, dig through this and dig through that HP94D81, you'll see that the cat now just has a different content. And there is no reference at all to the previous version of the content. If you wanted to see the previous one, you'd essentially have to walk the commits until you found a commit with a different shell for that file.
But the blob for that old version is still there in your key value store.
Yes. Okay. Yes, because it has
that's
to be.
That's how you get that complete history in your local.
And the way that it knows that it's replacing something is through the file name.
Yeah. It's just looking at the file. It's basically, you say, I want to add this file in. Okay, it puts it in the store and says, oh, now
it's
the tree is updated.
Diffs. So if I had this gigantic file called gc.cpp, and I went and made a two-character change, and then I added it, and then the character. And
it does do,
it have lots it's, of...
It stores compressed text, and it does do diffing at some level. Like, yes, in general, it's just throwing files into this content addressable store, but it also has... It has what it calls pack files under the hood, where it can do diffs and deltas and store basically a lot more compressed and diff text. But I've never run into that problem, and I edit giant files in Roslyn every day. And I use a TFS Git mapping, so I'm using Git all day anyways, and I don't have that problem.
I read that it could defer these sections until, I mean, it doesn't slow down your process. It packs them when it has time.
You can do things, like there are commands you can say, like, hey, go pack the repo, GC it, delete. Because you can end up with dead objects. Like, for instance, I just added that cat file. If I then said, no, I don't want to, and I deleted it and reset everything, that modified file would be in the store. And so there are kind of values which have no pointers to them, and you can go on later and kind of clean up your repo. But those are all things that I've never done, and I've used Git for years.
So, what's the shortest prefix you've ever typed in?
Probably 3 letters, because I was really lazy. I don't know if that works or not. I usually do 4 or 5.
So you had one file, I think.
Is it not autocomplete in PowerShell?
You can. Like, if you have PoshKit, I'll go over some of the tools later. Like, I'm showing you kind of the raw bones now, and we'll get into the prettier stuff later. So like I said, these are commits. So branches. So branches are just basically a reference to a commit. You're just saying, hey, I am on the branch master, and my commit is currently this. So it is just when you look at a content of a branch, it's just a SHA checksum. And every commit that you make in that branch just replaces the checksum which is in that file. And so that's all branches are in Git. They are super lightweight things. It's one file on disk. It has a SHA checksum in it, so it's 20 bytes per branch.
And so all the branches in your repo? You have all the branches in your repo?
Like, yes. Yes.
Windows file cluster size is just wasting space to format.
For instance, if I wanted to create a new branch here called test, I just do git checkout -b test.
What is -b?
It says new branch.
Uh-huh. That made a new branch?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you check out b.
And if we looked at the content of, if we just cat, so all branches end up getting stored under refs heads. Makes a ton of sense now, right? But there, anyone recognize that value? That's just the SHA of the last commit that we did. And if I were to go back here and...
How come they're under branches?
So it's not 20 bytes, actually. It's 40, right? So it's text.
20 bytes, 40 characters. Actually, you're right. It does store it. So it's 40 bytes. Okay, I'm wrong. Twice the size I said.
Oh,
I lied.
But Windows will not be able to take advantage of it.
And so we make another change. Do git log. We'll see that the new commit is 1A2B. And if I cat that again. See, once again, all it's done in that branch is just update the commit that I'm pointing to. Branches are extremely lightweight in Git.
So branches, each branch will be represented by a file in that subdirectory.
Yes. Okay. And you can look
so
it at...
must be valid file name.
So... Yes. Do not put any Unicode characters in there.
No.
I don't even know if that works in Git. Please don't.
No, I tried. It works.
I'll say it didn't fail.
So check-ins are cheap. Branches are cheap. What's like the expensive don't do this operation?
If you check in a binary file, we will come after you. Because binary files don't compress and they don't diff. And when here's the thing about the next slide. What all is in the Git repo? It's going to have the content addressable store, so that big backing database. It's going to have the list of named branches and the list of remote repos, which we'll get into in a minute. And for every one of those remote repos that we have, it'll have all of their branches. So that, by contrast, means that whenever you have a branch, you have its contents. You're not going to get a branch where you're like, oh, check this branch out. It's like, I don't have that data on my machine. If you, like I said, if you imagine that commits are basically mutable trees that have pointers to other immutable objects, the complete history is available for every branch because Git will ensure that you can follow every pointer in the tree recursively forever. So branches point to a commit, commit points to its parents, and commit points to contents.
Can I delete or rename a branch?
Hmm?
Can I delete or rename a branch?
Sure. It's just a file on disk. You're just giving it a new name. You're just putting a name to a checksum. That's all you're doing with branches.
The commits that have already been made don't really care about branches. I mean, they're just...
Yeah, there's no, in TFS today when you commit, like a commit happens, and if you look at the history, like, oh, what happened to this branch over here? Like I showed you the raw commit. It had no, it's just like, here is my parent commit, here is my data. That's all it is. It has no branches, are just a tool for developers to make their lives easier.
So it lets you get an inverse tree of commits by having a branch over here and branch over here, both originating eventually in the same commit, but having several commits that are their own.
Yep, exactly. But when you're talking about like what is bad for good and inefficient, this means that whenever you check out a Git repo, if you have a branch, you have its entire history for all time. Binary files don't diff well. So if you check in a binary file with every commit, we have to bring down every copy of that binary file when we close in the repo.
Every time it was modified.
Yes.
Okay, so for the tools that we do have checked in, I know our syntax generators and all of that, did you pull that out as part of our...
They are not checked in.
Okay, so we don't have any binaries checked in anymore.
We better not. The intent is, one of the things when I'm moving things from closed to open is if we have a binary we need, we move it to NuGet.
Or compile from sources.
NuGet references are cheap because they're just entries in a text file. Binary references are very expensive over the very long haul.
Okay. Now we had checked some of our documentation in as Word docs.
Those are fine.
Okay.
The Word docs are just XML files now. So.
Oh,
yes. Well, use Markdown. Don't check in talk files.
So the second I make a branch, it's not visible to people until I push.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that.
Did you mean don't check in dark files, or did you just make a joke?
We should talk about it. In general, we would use Markdown. I check in doc files, but I'm not. I need to talk to someone and ask them how well they do or don't version it yet. I don't know offhand.
If it understands zip archives, like, and could unzip and compare them and store the zip.
I doubt it does. I do not know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. We can follow that one up later. So, working with remotes. So, like I said, Git is distributed source control. When you have a Git repo, like it's just a giant addressable store on your disk with some named branches. And it also knows some information, typically what are called remotes, basically location of other Git repos, a way for them to talk and diff changes. So like everything else in Git, they just assign very simple names. So, and the typical way we break this down is typically everyone, there's an official repo for us, it's .NET Roslyn, and it's typically what named upstream. And developers will often work in a fork of the repo.
Should I create one for me?
Yes. And the name that they usually attach to that is origin. So generally, when you're working in a Git repo, you're working, there are three places that you're getting changes from. One, the Git repo, which is physically on your hard drive. The official repo, which is .NET Roslyn. And then whatever the repo is for your fork. So there are a couple of commands with working with remotes. The first one is fetch. Fetch is, all fetch says is, go to a particular repo, grab the list of branches it has and their current state. What commit do they point to? Bring all of that information down into my local repo. This action is always safe. All it's doing is just updating a list of remote branches and bringing down all the diffs. Git is smart, it will diff between your repo and their repo, and it will just bring down all of the changes. And all it's doing is updating the remote branch, the information stored in remote branches. So
it could be not fast, right? Because it downloads actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Fetch could be potentially expensive. Like if you went and fetched potentially the Linux kernel and you had a clean machine, I imagine it would take a little bit of time to download. I'm not sure how long Linux kernel's been in Git, but I assume it's quite a time.
What? So it downloads the full history?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you do a fetch, though, it'll diff. But if you have nothing, it's the full history.
When you do a fetch, it just gets the newer stuff that you don't have.
And it's honestly a very simple algorithm, because what the client says is it basically connects to the server and says, I want all of your latest branches. Here are all my latest commits. And then the server can just say, hey, I can just walk through the history, find where that commit is in the immutable tree, and just send you all the other ones. So the diffing is very easy. That's the logical way that syncs work, is just, here's the commit I have. Okay, let me send you the diff commits.
When you say commit, you mean the the hash code of the last thing you committed or the last yes. baseline that you had, and you want to pull everything forward from there.
Correct. You basically
hash
you
hash code be the value.
You basically yeah. Well, you basically send you are basically sending the server. You're saying, hey, last time I talked to you, you had these three branches and these were their commits, and then it sends back to you, hey, here are the new commits for those branches and here's the data.
So since that's always additive, it's always safe theory. You just set up a recurring daily job that just gets
fetches.
That fetches
yeah,
every morning, and there's no problem with it. Unlike now, where getting latest could like hose your entire working set.
Right, and the reason why is because what you're doing with TFS is you're basically getting the changes and merging them into your tree. Git has a command for that. It's called pull. I generally do not do like that. Is I find that the people who have used Git longer stop using pull as much. Because you're much more likely, because fetch is safe, and you might want to look and see what the differences are before you actually manually merge into your tree. But yes, so pull is the TFS is the rough equivalent of TFS git.
And when you talk about merging, when you fetch, you're bringing it from where to where? You're bringing it
from the remote to your machine,
probably your branch, your fork,
mm-hmm. or often the upstream.
Okay, but you're bringing it to your local machine in its database, but you're actual working files aren't touched, and that's why what you mean by it's safe because
yeah.
you haven't messed anything up until you try to bring your working files forward to whatever that state is.
Exactly, because all you're doing is saying, hey, update the store for me real quick. Just update the content addressable store for me real quick. I just want to be able to look at the changes they made. And the best part is if you fetch, you can yank your network cable out, walk away, and you can play with all the changes that have been made. Like, there's no need for a network connection after that. I can see the full history of the remote repo, and I can diff, I can merge, I can create fun branches. And
what's the opposite of fetch? Like, something that wouldn't necessarily change main?
When you push, you are pushing data to the server.
Fetch is obviously throw.
What I mean is, if I wanted to share one of my change sets mm-hmm. with somebody else, is there a way for me to get that set of changes and yes. that commit onto the server without changing the definition of the main branch.
Yeah, you would create a new branch. You'd basically say, I'm going to push a new branch called Anthony's Awesome Fix Monday. Like, and as long as it's not a branch that's already on the server, it's not going to change anything. It's just another name in the branch entry pointing to a new shop.
Push your own branches to upstream as branches or just to your fork?
Usually, we're going to go over that. Usually, you push them to your fork. To get them to the main, we're going to do what's called a pull request. I'll show you that.
Bad.
Huh?
That pull was bad.
A pull request. It's saying, hey, could you please do this pull? I promise I won't hurt you. So, like I said, all work happens in a personal fork. Like, you're going to be iterating in your personal fork. Your fork in GitHub is basically your storage. Like, hey, I need to move between machines. Push up to GitHub, walk away.
And it's publicly visible for everybody.
Yeah. You can make it private if you like to. But
the reason
I think
we have forks is I'm just trying to hit. Obviously I've got three things ignoring the authority. It's like I've got my fork, I've got my clone database, and I've got my working set. Right? Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to imagine the reason we fork and not just because you can't just send someone a pull request, say, hey, pull from my machine.
Yes.
I mean, because it might not be available.
Right. I mean,
we could,
in theory, all work in the main repo and push and basically do pull requests between that repo. Like, I believe that's how TypeScript works.
Every developer has a branch or something.
Basically. Yeah, every developer has a branch. The problem, though, is, like, you find a lot. We decided to go with this model because we don't want to clutter the main repo with Jared branch 1, Jared branch 2, Jared branch 3, because I'm the type of person if you look at some of my old history, I have one machine where I recently looked, I have 100 branches on one of my machines from fixes I made 3 years ago.
It's impossible to create a hierarchy of branches. They always plan this.
Yeah. The underlying commits could potentially be in a hierarchy, but branches are just linear. Mm-hmm. You can separate them with names, like you could put slashes in the middle so that it looks like a hierarchy, mm-hmm. but that has no bearing to the underlying data. The underlying data is just pointing to a commit.
They're just labels.
Huh?
They're just labels.
Exactly. They're a label that gets updated on every commit. Now, so if we can demo this a little bit. Oh, yes. So all work occurs in a personal fork. When you want to move up to the main repo, we create a pull request. And
fork is just a repo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a pull request is?
So in order to get my stuff really checked in, I've got to add the file, I've got to commit the changes, I've got to push them to my fork, and then I've got to pull them into...
Yep.
Into master or whatever.
What is it?
The upstream.
Into upstream.
Upstream.
And everybody else right. doesn't get those until they pull or fetch from.
Right, and then they get them, they have to like re-fetch to their fork. Or does your forks, they're independent until you like sync the forks?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, you would manually just say, I'm going to update master to be whatever the latest is. So here, like, I just fetched the official repo upstream. And if I wanted to... Yeah. See?
Was that one from zero, or was that just updating?
So this was from my fork of the tree.
Oh.
And I did a fetch. My fork is about 2 weeks out of date.
But the fresh fetch would take longer.
Like if you had to get everything.
I did a fetch when we walked. I did a clone when we walked in here, and it took like 20 seconds. Okay. We're on a really bad network connection.
Does git fetch upstream, does it update all your branches in that fork? Or
it updates, it keeps a list of branches for every remote. It'll update all of the branches for that remote. So my branches are independent. Like I have two branches here. I have fix readme and master. When I did fetch, it didn't do anything. But if I look, /A will show you all the branches. And you can see here that upstream has three branches. Master releases step 15 and release step 14. When I did the fetch from upstream, you can see here that it's receiving all this data, blah, 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 deltas. And it's basically saying, hey, as a result of this fetch, I created a couple of new branches. Upstream releases 15, preview, and master. And so that's all a fetch is doing, is updating those remote branches.
It's just the name contains slash in it. It's not like the branch HTTP5 under something called releases, right?
Yeah.
So it's one single name containing slash.
Yeah. I actually don't know if they're stored with slashes under the hood or not, but it's... I think it is, but I don't know offhand.
So,
but then once again, there's no hierarchy there. It's just people have chosen a name hierarchy. It has no relation to the underlying data.
So, dude, should I understand what you did up there with the git remote commands?
No, that's why I was trying to do it before everyone sat down. I didn't have enough time. That will automatically be done for you, like when you start checking out.
So unlike in TFS, like there's one, your one enlistment is, you know, your roles and directory. You don't have to have a different enlistment or folder structure for every branch that you're dealing with.
Right.
Well, if you don't want to, it looks like you haven't got to, but every time you want to switch between them, you have to like do a checkout command, which kind of like resets everything to a different branch.
Right.
And I was reading that if you have stuff uncommitted, like you're working in branch, let's say you're working on two bugs, and each bug's got its own branch, and you didn't get finished with some solution, mm-hmm. and you didn't commit it yet, well, if you try to switch to the other thing, I'm not quite sure what happened, but either you lose it or...
magic happens.
Or
you could create a new repo and clone the
game. Commit, it sounds like, rather than...
Just... Right, so I was thinking it's like, in order to switch between them, you probably want to commit what you have to your local store, even
yep.
though you're not done, and you're fine because you haven't messed anybody up. But if you really want to work in things in parallel, you probably want to have two different...
No, you have one repo, there's just a bunch of branches.
But I could have...
No, if you don't want to... If you want to have an uncommitted state...
Mm-hmm. I understand the desire to have multiple repos, but I think you'll quickly move to the model where it's like, oh no, just commit real quick, switch branches, and do the other work.
Why is that better?
It's just why I have to, like, you, branching is so cheap and so fast, and there's just having to repo just loses all of its value. It's like, oh, I need to switch gears real quick, I'll just stash whatever I want, and then just open this other thing over here, play that for a while, then okay, now I'm done, switch back over again.
To be clear, checkout will actually remove everything that's in the directory, the physical file directory currently, and unpack.
Yes, it'll diff. But it won't do things.
It'll clean up everything and install whatever branch you're.
Correct. Except for things like if you have new files which aren't tracked by Git, like if I added a new file and said, oh, I want to switch branches real quick, it won't. Things it doesn't know about, it won't touch.
Okay. In red will stay.
Yes. And it's not, and Git is not, checkout is one of the operations which is safe. Like if you did something that would cause unsaved work to go bad, like it will stop and say, I'm not doing it. Like, I can't do that.
Name conflict, for example, it will stop.
Yeah, it'll stop and say that something that would cause a destruction.
You added something.
It also wouldn't overwrite just an uncommitted modified file.
Correct. It will not overwrite files silently. It might choose to say, oh, it looks like you've edited that file now instead of added it, but it will not silently delete your data.
So in that scenario where I'm working on one bug, I switch to the other, there's no risk of me hitting checkout and having forgotten to commit this other thing, and now all of that work is just trash.
Checkout is fine. Checkout is safe. Okay, so real quick, because I want to get through these. So, like, open up the README, and let's say I want to, like, change a word in here or whatever. So, all I do is change README. I'm in the Roslyn repo on the local machine. You can see it says, hey, you modify.
It prompts for commit message if I forget.
Yes. I'm just short circuiting some of these things. What did I call it? So all I'm doing here is just basically saying that I'm pushing to my repo the fix README branch as it currently exists.
So your origin is your fork.
Yeah. Origin is always your fork. Upstream is always the official thing.
That's a conventional thing.
That's what complete convention.
Named them when you made the fork.
Yes. It's just, and that is purely, a lot of things in Git are standard, but really they're just conventions. And so if we were to go to...
But everybody in this room has commit permissions to the official repo,
yes.
Which is very dangerous.
Don't do git push upstream.
Yes.
Or don't do git push origin if you clone from the origin.
Yeah, we're gonna
Now you've lost me.
I'm gonna fix that. We're gonna do something about that. Directly push to master and commit your changes without MPRs, and that would be bad. But like, this is my fork of the thing, Jared Parr Roslyn from .NET Roslyn. And if I were to look here, my branches now, you can see there's the fix README branch.
It's because you pushed it up.
Yep. And then if I look at the commit history, we have really? Did that not work?
Do you just like pick a branch and make a pull request right from the branch?
Yes.
Like, what's the button here?
So push is also always
safe. It will tell you if you're doing something wrong.
You check the data.
You type the colon in the colon. What does that mean?
There we go. So.
Can you explain the syntax you used?
No.
And the colon?
I can explain it afterwards.
Okay.
So once I have this branch, like I can say from here, like fix README 2, I can say, okay, this is a change. I want to commit to the official Roslyn. I want to do a pull request. This is amazing. Why is that? I've never actually seen that fail.
It could be a bug on GitHub, right?
Go to the pull request page.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to have to do. Generally, you just click pull request and it works, but apparently that's not going to work today. So we say new pull request. Where am I? Compare across forks. See, and
as a master to their.
So this repo knows about your oven?
Yep, it knows all of the ones that created from it. Is pull request just down right now? Why did I not create? Oh, that's why. This is what happens when you format a machine in the morning.
It's not just off.
That's
why. It sends an SMS to you.
Yep.
That's fast.
Yeah, you better
takes
have
me forever.
Huh?
It takes forever to text me.
And now it works. Hey. So
it's got VIP shit.
We can create a pull request. And you can see that basically it'll create a pull request. We're on .NET Rosin now. And this is a tool. So it shows all of the changes. You can add comments.
Pull this tip.
Now we still have TFS for a little while.
It's
not
really a very good dip tool that they have, so you should probably bring it up. It's a good tool.
And you can do things like use @s to bring in people and like give them like basically if I send this, like Jason now got an email and he once again missed a meeting. If we wanted to, customers will send things this way. When we're ready to accept the changes, we'll do things like merge pull request, and that'll actually push it directly into master.
Is that where you can also put fixes?
Yes.
Ash.
But absolutely.
It's difficult to unclick that button, right?
Unclick.
Pull request. If you accidentally click,
you can roll back.
If you can roll back, we can erase history.
It's not easy.
No, it's easy. Okay. If you ever make a mistake in Git, just come talk to me. Come get Jason Malinowski or Andy Gok. We can fix it. It's not a big deal.
Any who?
Andy Gok.
Oh, Andy Gok. I said Andy Gok.
Andy Gok.
What is
Sorry.
That?
Okay.
So what if I'm in a branch and I've made like a million different commits and I want to collapse that down for the sake of my pull request because I don't want the history to show like every keystroke.
You're looking for squash.
It's appropriately named. I want to squash.
Yes.
That's a command.
Yes. So there, some people have very strong opinions on things like if you should rebase, you should merge, you should squash. The strict policy we have in Rosalind is if you bother me with that, I get to torture you in some small way. Payment. Like, do what feels natural to you. Do what makes sense for your workflow. And if you feel like squashing your commits, have fun.
Do you have a recommendation for those of us who have no workflow to start?
Don't just use merge for now. Use merge for a while until you're comfortable. Until you finally break down and read an article on rebasing. And if you want to rebase after that, feel free. If you ever have questions about it, believe me, I'll talk to you about it. I definitely can help people out with rebasing. I like to rebase for some scenarios, but not for everything.
So if I do a pull request and it has like, you know, a million of these, if I edited a file like 7 times,
mm-hmm.
right, does the pull request show all of those?
It's going to show the final state. The diff will show the final state. If you look through the series of commits, you can see.
Okay, so the history, it'll pull.
If you want to hide all your bad commits that you went through before you got it actually functioning correctly,
yes.
Then you squash.
You can squash, or you can just straight up rewrite history in different ways.
So
anyway, so we've got 4 minutes left, so I want to burn through a couple. If you have big Git questions, trust me, I'll talk to you afterwards. So the tools. Git does have a UI. GitHub for Windows. Please install this. This is an application done by GitHub. It is. I use it every day. The guys who work on it are really awesome, really responsive to bug fixes. It will set up, like, if one thing you notice, I was in the command line doing a bunch of stuff. I never typed in a password. I never get token. Only time I had to use my phone was I went to the website. The reason why is because I installed GitHub for Windows. I signed in once, and it set up all the nastiness for me. It actually set it up so well, in fact, that Lincoln came to me, and he was like, how do you use two-factor on the command line? I'm like, I have no idea. It just works for me. And I actually had to remember that, oh, yeah, GitHub for Windows does it for me. Like,
it also does lots of other magic that I don't like.
Yeah. But for people starting out with Git, this is a great one to start with. It'll also install a couple of nice tools in your machine, mysysgit, which is a nice standard version of Git for Windows. It pushes poshgit, which will get your command line completion for various items.
In PowerShell.
Yes, which is also a very nice tool. And also, it is automatically and frequently updated.
I've noticed, maybe this is just because I did something wrong, but I did that, and I installed PoshGit, and it was great. I'm in here in this whole little Git thing, but then I tried to MS build inside there, and of course, it didn't have any of the dev environment mm-hmm. settings, and so build will eventually fail for Roslyn.
Right.
So you have to, like, still, I have to have...
Oh, no, I have one tool for everything. You just need to... I'll send you a command later to, like, pull MS build environment variables into your PowerShell thing.
For all of us.
Yeah. So another one is FXKit. This is something anyone know Nick Herrera on the CoreFX team. Mm-hmm. He's doing a lot of work with the CoreFX repo. He has this toolkit called FXKit. It's an FX copy toolkit. It's an X copy toolkit, and all it is just a Git environment optimized for DevDev. So basically, it has a lot of really handy commands for getting to CoreFX, getting to CoreCLR. He has a whole little presentation I've linked to at the top of this. This is not Razzle. There's no admin rights. There's no private tool sets. It's extending Git in ways that Git was meant to be extended. This is toolkits gaining a lot of traction in CoreFX. This is not a requirement. We will never make this forced to be used, but it isn't a really nice tool, and he put a lot of work into it. So a couple other places, TortoiseGit, a little bit of UI on top of Git. Some bare bones, if you really just hate UIs, like MySysGit and Cygwin, like that'll get you pretty close to the metal there. So what goes where? So the way we do our code flow today is we have the open and close directories, and we have this one-way pump that pushes the source and build directories over to GitHub. So starting Monday, it's going to go the other direction. We're going to basically just be taking GitHub's our source of truth. We're pumping directly into a TFS open directory. And if you try to check in for TFS after that, we're going to squash your commits. And just
not in the sense of
not in the good sense. We're going to stomp on them with authority.
Get stomped.
So is it going to build then?
Yes, it's just building out of TFS. I'll get to that. I'll get to how the builds work. It will build by the time we move over there. So where do I work? Majority of your work is going to be in GitHub. So that holds the vast majority of our production code at this point and the good portion of our tooling. Do the work in your personal forks. We're going to merge back into the main with pull request. Occasionally, you will need a full enlistment for cross-cutting changes that go into closed. We're going to add a nice little handy script into the TFS one, which will basically map everything together. It'll make the open directory a Git repo and make everything else TFS so that you can do cross-cutting changes and see how they will affect both repos. The intent is that those type of cross-cutting changes should be really, really rare. If we find that we're doing them on anything more than like a once-a-week basis, that means there's code that needs to get into the open directory as soon as possible. If you do find that's happening, come talk to me and we'll find a way to make that stop.
What's still in closed?
A couple of things that we just can't. Well, so components not in public, like editor test app. So that and a couple other things are in there. All the major components...
break that all the time.
I know. All the major components are going to be GitHub by Sunday. The smaller items will start migrating afterwards. Do feel empowered to move things yourself. Like, I've been moving everything so far. Once we're into Git, I will probably focus more on my compiler work again. And if you need something moved, I will help you. But in general, we need to start moving the rest over as fast as possible. There's only a small number of things we can't move. Just come check with me, and I'll tell you whether it's a good or bad thing. The way code gets shipped is all of our Git changes are mirrored into TFS. The official build still comes from microbuild. It just uses TFS like it does today. Our GitHub changes mirror into TFS, and nothing really changes from the perspective of our official build. So this whole Git TFS thing, we have closed is in TFS, but open is in Git. That's a short-term thing, only going to happen for a few weeks. We just got to give developers time to adjust, let things settle down, and we're going to move the closed stuff into a private repo eventually. So the one last thing is just have a little patience during the move. So this is a real big change. Like we're working to make this as smooth as possible, but nothing makes the change smaller. This is still a gigantic change, a gigantic process change. So there are going to be some hiccups, going to be some obstacles, and a transition period. Just work with your teammates. Like I said, people who know Git, like me, Jason, Andy, Kevin, Lincoln. Actually, Kevin, and Kevin should all be good resources for you.
Find your nearest Kevin.
Find your nearest Kevin.
It's easier when everyone with the same first name.
Exactly. They should all be great resources for you.
They all have different SHA-1 hashes.
Yeah. They're in different couple of...
So wait, JKL. Yeah. Jason, Jarrett, Kevin, Lincoln.
Yeah.
Contiguous alphabet.
No, okay, I'll let it go. Right.
So, a couple other good resources. The ProGit book online. This is an online free book. It is excellent. I read it all the time when I'm trying to figure out a particular thing for Git or even researching this talk. The Git SCM blog on the same page has amazing entries. One day you should read the entry about the three trees of Git. The Git immersion tool, if you've never played with Git, go to that website. It's kind of a visual introduction to Git. It is great. It will really kind of get you off the ground. And if you're having any problems with Git, just Google Git My Problem. Like, it will. There are so many resources out there, you will just not have time to even read them all.
So there are no Visual Studio tools from us for dealing with
there Git? Are. I just have never... I've never used them. I was using Git for much longer than those tools existed, and they came around, and I was already comfortable with command line and GitHub from Windows. But anyway.
So when you moved everything from CodePlex, did everything stay the same?
The history?
Yeah.
Yes. The history just moved straight over from CodePlex.
And even the usernames of the people who did it.
Yep.
So
it
like
all,
if I'm trying to figure out who to send cups to, I can just pull it all from GitHub now.
Yep. If you look at the email addresses, they're all there.
Perfect.
The history is perfectly shared. To the fact that when we push, like, Steve
and
Tobe email.
The shells will be the same?
Yep. Perfect. Yep. The full history, we intentionally kept the history when we migrated over. Beauty of Git. It doesn't care where it came from. It just shares what it is.
Do you recognize that your directory is a Git repo from the Git?
Yes.
So you just open the solution file and VS will know it's...
It will know it's Git, but that's all I can really say because I really just haven't used the Git tools. Like, I'm much more comfortable with other tools, and I have a lot more experience with them.
I just mean you open the solution, you start editing the file, it's going to do your Git ads for you.
I believe so.
Because I've used it, but for a different project where I did the cloning in VS from the other remote thing. And
okay. Yeah, I've just have not a lot of experience with that.
The only thing that I found that so far that VS, or at least it's maybe a bug, in the, is that it didn't correctly tell it about new files.
Okay.
How did you
Hey, Beth, if you've got to go, if you want to kill the recording now.
Yeah, that's cool. Just email me and let me know where to put it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Beth.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.